You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Had I been afforded the opportunity as a child to just be like, Miss Long is so pretty, maybe I would not be on Twitter screaming like Rachel Weisz, punch me in the mouth, you know?
Right.
I'm ducking out, you're ducking out. Let's duck out together, see what it's all about.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that occasionally and bravely talks about Taylor Swift. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we are dyking out about lesbian pop culture with Jill Gutowitz.
Melody is so scared that I just mentioned Taylor
my
Swift.
My heart rate's up. I wish I could show you my Fitbit. I'm scared.
In anticipation, please leave us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts because things are going to get dicey. Now, we do not speak ill.
No, we don't.
Of Tay Tay in any way.
Just mere mentions sometimes are even a huge risk.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be a trigger for some folks.
And we get into that in our interview.
Yes, yes. First, though, there's still time, I think. I don't think it's sold out yet to get tickets to our next Stonewall show, March 28th. We have Pat Brown, who was scheduled last time, but actually couldn't make it. But Pat Brown will be making her glorious return to Stonewall on March 28th. We have recent guest Alicia Hush. We have
Carmen LaGalla, and we have Just Tom.
Yes, Just Tom is coming back.
Sexy
they've
lineup.
Been doing so many shows. They've been performing their hour all around New York, but it'll be fun to see the material that they're going to bring to Stonewall. Can't wait. Actually, last time I saw them, IRL, was at Stonewall when I convinced them and Lady Lamb to come for the Sunday honey burlesque tea party.
Oh, that. Yeah.
You were there. You know what I'm talking about.
I was there. Seen Jess a few times since then. All times have been on stage, crushing it. So excited. We got them. Can't wait.
Get those tickets. Go to Instagram. The link is in our bio. And well, if you can't support us at our shows in person, you can definitely support us on our Patreon.
Oh, I love it there.
Yes, patreon.com/dykingout. There's an extra episode every single week.
That is so nice. That is so generous. That is so exciting.
It is. And if you want to hear how Melody really feels about me, go there.
What?
I take it. What? I'll take.
What did I do?
You know, Melody just makes fun of me for the way I pronounce certain things.
She's got a sharp A. Carolyn's a contrarian, and I love to call her out on it. Is that what you're talking about?
Don't find label out at patreon.com. A contrarian. I'm going to be a contrarian about being labeled a contrarian.
Yeah, I know. I know you are. Carolyn.
Lukewarm takes.
Quite contrarian.
Sometimes go over to patreon.com/checkingout to see what that's about. We also have a Discord and we love it there. We're learning all sorts of things and having a lot of fun.
Listening, learning, growing. Can I listen to you right now? What's the gayest thing you did this week?
The gayest thing I did this week? Well, you know, every time that I think I have a gayest thing and then we have to push the recording by a day, a new gayest thing happens. So originally it was going to be that at the sublet that I stay in sometimes when I'm in Brooklyn, there is a radiator in the lobby with a sign that specifically says, if you're trying to get rid of stuff, do not leave it here. And people always leave stuff there. The sign isn't working. And thank the goddess for that, because I walked in the other day and Megan Rapinoe's autobiography was sitting there and I snatched it up so quick with zero intention of reading it.
Only because
I'm not a big reader and we have so much to read for the podcast. So I don't know when I'll get around to it, but maybe one day. But I knew I needed it on my shelf. So I just grabbed that autobiography of Megan Rapinoe. It was just I don't know, queer kismet? Is that the right phrase? I'll call it that.
Queersmet.
Queersmet. But then last night, I'm in Buffalo right now with Cecilia, and I always talk about how my favorite lesbian bar that I used to go to, Roxy's, shut down years and years ago, and I really haven't explored the gay scene too much in Buffalo. Usually when I'm here, I'm just with family. But I was like, let's go to Fugazi. Fugazi is a gay bar, mostly men, and it plays, get this, music videos.
I love them.
All the time. It's just music, you know, recent topic, and it's like Sam Smith, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, just like great queer feeling videos, and it's a good vibe. It's definitely like a divey bar. And what was gay about it was Cecilia and I got there. We spot a pool table, which was great because Cecilia was asking if we could go somewhere with pool. And there's a sign on the pool table that says they can't give out quarters because of the national coin shortage. So we had to leave the bar to go get quarters to play pool because we're not going to just sit there and stare at an unoccupied pool table, which, you know, if you live in New York, that's a rare find to have the pool table not be occupied. So we get some quarters. We come back. We noticed that there was a group of femme presenting. And I'm going to say I'm pretty sure they were all queer at the bar. And they seem young, maybe they're college. One was wearing like a rugby shirt, you know, just adorable young queers. Cecilia and I go into the other room with the pool table. 5 minutes later, they all come into the room. We created a lesbian bar at Fugazi. We divided
so
the bar.
Easy. Why are they talking about a shortage?
Right. It definitely felt like two different bars at that point. One that was just a bunch of lesbians playing pool and darts. And then a bunch of gay guys at the bar sipping on martinis, watching music videos on the other side. So yeah, we created a lesbian bar. It's the gayest thing that we did this week. Honorable mention, though, to our shared gayest thing, Melody, is that we did go see past guest Kara Connors at Union Hall, which Kara is flaming. So gay in itself. We just have to give a shout out to Kara and her Straight for Pay tour that she has been on.
Kara. So good to see Kara. Yeah. Flaming. did the set, did an hour, and immediately changed into a basketball jersey to play bocce ball right after. Yep. So
that's the gayest thing she did.
Oh, yeah.
Was changed into her basketball jersey to absolutely crush at bocce ball. Just very impressed with the skill level there. So, Melody, if that's not the gayest thing that you witnessed or did, what was the gayest thing you did this week?
Oh, my God. Speaking of music videos, I did find myself watching Muna music videos because a new one dropped this last week, but then we were just watching all of them. Ali Pankyu, past guest director, does such a good job with those music videos. So sexy, so fun, so cool. Ali and I had Muna music videos on while we painted eggs for our Nowruz half scene. Now, what's a half scene? Do I say this every year? I don't know. If I've talked about the half scene before with the Persian New Year, you
can't
have
talk about it enough.
Yeah. An arrangement. It's called a half scene. Half to mean seven. Scene is the letter S in the Persian alphabet. And it's seven things that start with the letter S that symbolize different things. And like seer is garlic. You have that to represent like health in the new year. You have sabze, which is like greens, little like sprouts growing in a dish. You have sib, which is an apple. Everything represents something else to bring into the new year with you, like that represent love, patience, beauty, regrowth, vitality, etc. So
would it be bad if we appropriated this for the queer community, but like have a queer new year and use the acronym, and then each letter from the acronym, you have something. No. Okay.
What, did my face do something? I was listening.
I'm just spitballing here. I just, you know, a lot of cultures have a different New Year. The celebrations all sound great, and I feel like, Why just have pride? Why not have a queer new year? Mm-hmm. And I really like cultural and religious celebrations that have food or things like that that are tied to meanings.
Yes.
You know, like a Passover and everything. I'm into that.
Hell yeah.
I like a good story. Continue.
Yeah, the eggs aren't one of the original seven in the half scene, but there's like additional things you can put in there, like sumar or sumac, the spice, symbolizes sunrise. So that's one. And then the eggs aren't in the original seven, but a lot of people will paint eggs and put that on their half scene. So Ali and I were painting eggs last night and listened to a program on NPR and then switched over to Muna music videos. I'm like, this is extremely gay on a Friday night. Other than that, my gayest thing is absolutely staring at the clock because UConn women's basketball starts in a half hour, first game of the NCAA tournament. I made a bracket. That's the gayest thing, making my bracket just for women's, not for men's. NCAA tournament. UConn is playing in 30 minutes. We gotta wrap this up.
All right, well, pressure's on. Let's get to our interview, which, you know, who would want to delay getting into this one? Because we are diking out with author, writer, and director Jill Gutowitz about pop culture, lesbian pop culture specifically. You probably already follow her on social media. And if not, what are you doing? Her work has been featured in the New York Times, Time, Vanity Fair, Vulture, Elle, Glamour, Cosmopolitan, Vice, and more. Recently, Harper's Bazaar, we get into it. And her debut book of essays, Girls Can Kiss Now, is available right now. So get it, but also listen to this. J, Jill, thank you so much for diking out with us today. I have been following you on Twitter for what seems like ages, and this seems like the perfect timing to actually sit down and have a conversation.
Oh my God, wow, thank you. I'm so excited to be here to dike out.
Yes, yes.
Let's do it.
You know, your book, when did it come out officially? Girls Can Kiss Now.
It came out on the 8th, on Tuesday.
Great. So everybody buy it if you haven't already. We're going to get into it, but just so much fun to read. It's funny. I feel like it should be read in like colleges. It's like just so informative. It's
thank you.
Yeah, it just reminded me, here I am saying, like, we're going to get into it in a minute, but I'm, like, verbal diarrheaing. Yeah.
You can't help yourself. You're enjoying it so much.
I am. It's just, like, all the significant moments in lesbian pop culture that, like, some I forgot about or some, like, I hadn't fully, like, ruminated on and...
repressed.
right. But, yeah, we'll get into that. First, though, we want to know something.
We have a question for you.
Okay.
Would you be able to tell us the gayest thing you did in the last week?
Wow, that's a really good question. I've had like a really gay week too because of the book's release. I mean, on a larger scale, I feel like I had like an in-person book signing event, and that feels like the gayest thing I did because there were just like so many, like I was just like surrounded by so many queer people that felt awesome and gay. I love to be surrounded by other queers. Like on a smaller scale, I keep returning to looking at photos of Lindsay Lohan and I can't stop.
Oh yeah.
Which was also like a part of the book and like in theory part of the book process with like talking about things that I covered in the book. But I, you know, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't also for fun/personal.
Right.
Of course. You've been thinking about her a lot lately because she's having this sort of comeback and then sitting down to read your book. I know you have your obsession. So it was just, perfect timing. I've been thinking and Googling a lot of Lindsay Lohan too.
Yeah. A lot of Googling. So. I've always been doing a lot of Googling Lindsay Lohan, unfortunately.
Yeah. Can't wait to get into that more because there's so much to unpack with her.
Yeah, truly.
How long have you been working on this book?
So long. It feels like, here's like the general timeline. It's like I sold the book proposal in February, 2020, started writing in like April, 2020. So that's like when I was officially starting to write. But before that, I had taken like a year to write the book proposal that sold. And before that, there was another year where I was working on a different book proposal that was like a much earlier iteration of this that didn't sell. So I guess really like since 2018, I've been putting efforts forth for what is now Girls Can Kiss Now.
Wow.
Yeah. And how did you land on the title for it?
Oh man, it was, my girlfriend and I were talking about this the other day and she was like, sitting through the title process with you was like amongst the most excruciating things either of us have ever done. And I was like, no, I know. I agonized and agonized and agonized over this, like more than I ever, I'm like the kind of person who like agonizes over, you know, like what to eat for lunch and like, should I get up now to go to the bathroom or in 10 more, can I hold it 10 more minutes? You know, like everything it requires overthinking. So to like pick a title of a book was like truly the biggest task I've ever had to overcome in my like overthinking brain. There were so many titles. I just like couldn't find one that I felt really good about. Another title that The Canon was like an early version of it, like, you know, playing with lesbian canon of it all. Also there's a chapter in there called One Day You'll All Be Gay. That was almost a title too. But, you know, I think like the things I knew I wanted for a title were, I wanted something that felt celebratory, of like the moment that we're at, that we've arrived at, you know, in like, in queer culture. And also something that signals both, you know, a journey to getting to this place in pop culture and also a journey in for like my personal life of like coming to the place, to a place of feeling like, you know, girls can kiss now and feel really gleeful about it, because I, you know, I came out when I was 23 and it took some time for me to feel really good about it. So
yeah, girls can kiss now. Straights can dress like lesbians now. I just read your Harper's Bazaar piece on sapphic style going mainstream. It does seem like, yeah, so much has culminated in the last few years. Not just in your personal story in the book, but just like in pop culture, lesbianism finally cool.
Yeah.
We're taking up space.
Totally.
I love it.
Yeah. And like, you know, like that, you know, the arc of the book is like both of those things. It's like the mainstreaming of lesbian culture. And also because of that, you know, me like coming to find not just peace in my sexuality, but like true, like overwhelming joy in it. And I wrote this piece for Harper's Bazaar that was, you know, like it accompanying the book about like kind of the mainstreaming of lesbian fashion specifically. And I, you know, it's like, I have mixed feelings about it, which I say in the article with, you know, like I am happy to see, to like feel validated in this like kind of baseline human way of like, oh, this is like, you know, widespread cool now. And also it does make me, it does frustrate me to see like any old straight woman wearing Doc Martens. And I'm like, I wanted to wear Doc Martens in high school and everyone said slurs at me. So that sucks, but.
I know, I was reading the first few paragraphs and it seemed celebratory and I was like, wait, am I the asshole? Like, and then I got to the paragraph where you feel resentful, like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
We can feel all things.
there's a dichotomy there for sure.
Yeah,
it is so crazy because I always think about, even like recently I was going through a drawer I have that's full of dresses that I haven't worn in ages, and that like, even though I came out when I was 17, I was like, but I cannot dress like a lesbian, like, or like if I'm just one, but nobody can tell right away, then that's the safe way to go. And everyone will accept me as is. So now it's like, OK, I could have been looking way hotter way sooner.
Yeah, totally. And that, you know, that's, I think like that is one of the main resentments in general that I have is like, had this been all, you know, more widespread accepted much earlier, I could have gotten there way faster. You know, I could have like, found this out about myself and loved myself a lot earlier in my life, which is, again, like the frustrating thing, which is that like these are things I used to have to, you know, you feel shame about, which are now on any woman named Sarah.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, in reading your book, just like I felt like I hadn't really examined like all of the sources of this kind of like internalized homophobia that I might have had when I was younger. And when you call out these examples from like movies and shows where it was just like the one person who was a little bit different, it's like, oh, they're a lesbian, they're an uber dyke, all of that. I'm like, oh my God, that is why I like was just terrified. Like, like how much of an influence that actually was on a lot of us. And even though I like once I was out as a lesbian, I'm like, this is great, this makes sense. But then I was still like parroting those horribly toxic.
Yeah.
Toxic views.
So toxic. You talk about Bring It On and someone being called an uber dyke. I was obsessed with that movie. I thought I knew every word from it. Like I would sit down and recite it along with the movie from start to finish. Yet I forgot about, like I had buried that one line of the movie and like completely forgot about it until I was reading this, a movie I thought I knew so thoroughly.
No, I'm the same way with Bring It On, where it's like, it's one of those movies I've seen so many times, it's almost like I've memorized the dialogue of it as if it's a song. Like the way that they say things, I can, you know what I mean? Like I know not only every word, but the way they are said.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That kind of stuff in the 2000s is like the little stuff that builds up that like really got me, I think, is that like, you know, with specifically with Bring It On and Missy slash Eliza Dushku, it's like they present her as this person who is like objectively cool, cooler than everyone, too cool for cheerleading, you know, and they set you up to be like, oh, fuck yeah. Like here she is. She's got her, you know, wallet chain and her tattoos and whatever. And then once you're already there being like, she's so fucking cool, or me at least, they're like, they call her an Uber dyke. And then she gets laughed out of the room. And then it made me, I feel like, you know, I said this in the book, like kind of like mistrust my own instincts about like what is cool, because I was like, well, if I thought that was cool and I identified with that or wanted to, like in an aspirational way, and now I know that that could get you laughed out of a room, now I have to like start like correcting myself, you know, because I didn't laughed out of the room in a room full of hot cheerleaders, obviously.
Yeah, it was confusing. I also love, like, further along in the book you talk about like gay guy culture and you gravitating towards that as cool. And I related to that so hard. I think I talked recently on the podcast and like thought, I'm only starting to realize it's my own internalized misogyny and homophobia that I like gravitate more to like gay guy culture. And I think all their memes and like things they talk about, obsess over, are cooler. And I loved the line you had after talking about Kristen Stewart embodying what typically has classically been cool with her like haircut and her leather jackets, and how we just need, we're taking up space in cool culture. And
yeah,
she was so close to taking up that space and Bring It On.
Yeah.
Who knew if we had taken out that slur.
Totally. No. And it's like, if that
could change lives.
Absolutely. Like if that movie came out today, like in exactly the same form, she would obviously be like the hot, like lesbian character, and they would take the Uber dyke out of it and it would just exist as is. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like the world view of the movie would have been so different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
A tragedy.
Let's dive into more toxicity. Is that what we're doing? I know we're talking lesbian pop culture. We all came of age in such a gross time. Yes. Like, I am thoroughly enjoying your book and I'm so triggered
at the same time. Thank you, and I'm sorry.
God, the Perez Hilton of it all, like things I just like buried.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, your knowledge of pop culture is so vast, and you touch on it in the beginning, like right in the beginning, about how it, like taking an interest in pop culture can be seen as like vapid. It's something that only women or gay men are interested in. But then you kind of have a more evolved viewpoint on that. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, totally. No, I, and you know, this is something I kind of grappled with in the book and like over the course of writing the book, because originally when I sold the book, it, you know, it was supposed to be more like humorous analytical essays about like film, TV, culture, music, etc. And then because the pandemic happened like the same month that I was supposed to start writing. And so like the tone and the material in the book kind of changed a little bit in ways that like I'm glad that it did. But you know, I kind of start, we all were kind of grappling at the time with like watching celebrities fully melt down in front of us and being like, this is intolerable to watch. And you know, it made me feel like, how important is pop culture, and is it vapid and vacuous? Something that I've always said that it isn't. But just like watching the meltdowns, I was like, whoa, like this is really bad and really toxic. And, you know, I think ultimately I reached the conclusion that I do still think pop culture is like very, very valuable, because I think it's politics, you know, like anything that is going on in the world politically is reflected in like trends, music, you know, the stories we're watching in film and TV, which is like shown to us in, you know, ultimately in Us Weekly or whatever it is, like whatever way we consume pop culture. And so I think like, it's very human, I think, to want to read and consume stories about what's going on in the world and like how it's affecting people. So I think that like pop culture is very important. It is, I don't think it's like a vapid, vacuous pastime. But I am glad that I had to kind of like reach that conclusion again in my adult life, because there's definitely, you know, some celebrity culture that is bad and I think affects people's like self-worth of like, you know, certain kinds of messages of like, you know, having certain things, followers, money, food, attention, whatever, you know, whatever the thing is like what your value should be. And like, that is something that I wholeheartedly disagree with. Like that part of celebrity culture, I do think is bad and wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
You consume a lot of celesbian culture. We had a little reckoning about our fascination with certain, like we speculate a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Carolyn and I. Yes. And we had to take a real long, hard look at ourselves after reading about maybe some of the harms with speculating about celebrities, because how different are we then from Perez Hilton? We're not drawing cum on people's faces, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we have grappled with that before, in terms of, yeah, like the excitement of like, oh, I want this person to be queer, let's talk about it, or being like, oh, obviously they're queer, come on, you know, but not like, I don't know, I guess like Perez Hilton felt like it just felt malicious.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas like, I feel like I don't have like the actual power to out someone. It's not like I saw someone in a bathhouse and then I'm like, you know,
yeah,
putting that out. I'm just like reading the clues like everyone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, Perez Hilton, man.
Yeah, he's bad. Yeah.
I didn't know he was still at it, I guess because he became so irrelevant, but I was surprised that I saw the famous Ellen apology in quotes.
Yeah, he tried to like come out as not a bully anymore.
Right.
And then I don't even remember how long it took. It could have been 6 months, I'm not sure. And then he was like, yeah, this is my bread and butter though. And then like went back to the tone of his website being, yeah, like kind of malicious.
Yeah.
Imagine if like Stan culture had intersected with like the height of his reign and like he was speculating, trying to out Taylor Swift, and the Swifties got to just go after him and take him down. I don't know if that was possible. He only was able to exist at that time, but
totally. No, I'm like, Swifties are like truly like unimaginably scary. I mean, I'm one of them, but like they are, when they mobilize, it is so scary.
We've been on the other end.
We've been on the
same.
Blunt end of
like not too extreme, but I didn't know that some of them would like out other Swifties to their family.
Yeah, no.
What?
That's insane.
There's like
I don't know what you're talking about. There's
been like inner Swiftie fighting and outing, where like there's like different actions, you know, of the like Swiftie community, like the Gaylers, the people who really want Taylor Swift to be gay. I mean, well, there's also different factions of this group. I feel like there's ones that are like homophobic and so don't want her to be gay for those reasons. There's also ones who are not homophobic, but like don't want people to speculate because they're like, respect her word, like respect mother's word. The like homophobic ones have like, you know, basically like doxed and outed people who have like anonymous, you know, Swiftie stan accounts to their like friends and family, which is fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I'm like, I can talk for hours about inner Swiftie wars, but
I'm afraid to touch the subject.
Same. Let's get out of here.
They'll hit our reviews again for even mentioning her.
For anyone who's interested, I mean, as you mentioned in your book, you can go on Tumblr. We also, on our Patreon, have an episode that comedian Sarah Kennedy came on. I mean, it's not updated with the latest, but she did bring her binder, let's say, of evidence. And we held on to it and we're like, the day that Taylor Swift comes out, we're going to take this outside the paywall and release this. but it's never happened. And there have been days where I'm like, oh, I think it's happening tonight. And I'm like sitting at my computer ready to be like the first one to make that episode live.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, no, it's scary. And what, you know, what I was going to say earlier is that like it, if that existed at the time of Perez Hilton, like he honestly could have gotten swatted or something horrible because yeah. They're scary. They can be really scary.
Yeah. And even just like I mean, I guess this is a good natural segue to get into Lindsay Lohan. the nicknames, like the mean and homophobic and like lesbophobic, butchphobic.
Yeah. Completely names. Forgot about Leslo and Samantha.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And I would log on and read it every day. I was inundated with it, but I had completely forgot because I think I just buried a lot of that era.
Well, I also feel like it was like so much a part of the culture that like, because I also like, you know, and I said this in the book, like I would read Perez Hilton like multiple times, like every day. I would come home from school and read it. And it was so like, it became so normal in the culture, you know, like that kind of like, really like vocal bullying that it wasn't even considered that, you know? So like, I also like it, a lot of this, I like looked back and I was like, oh fuck, this was like really bad. And I also, you know, I barely remembered some of the like Leslo, you know, nickname kind of stuff. Cause it was just so a part of the moment that I didn't think it was abnormal at the time.
I know I feel like we didn't even recognize how mean it was at the time because at the same time, you had Diane Sawyer being a total cunt to Britney Spears, but in a way that wasn't as obvious as like drawing cum shots on her face. So like that stuff is the bar of like polite, you know, or like Matt Lauer, or like whoever these people are, just being total assholes.
Yeah.
to female celebrities in particular, that when Perez Hilton does it, it's like, oh, he's just kidding around, you know, but it is like some of the darkest, like meanest stuff I've ever read.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that was like a reflection of like how normal that was at the time where like, if, you know, had I'm sure I did. I don't like have a strong memory of it, but like had I watched that Diane Sawyer Britney interview at the time, I probably would have been like, well, yeah, she's a journalist. She's like doing her job.
Right.
Which is like, no, there's also a lot of like personal, like moral responsibility and like being a human being. I don't know.
Right.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Right.
It was just such a harsh time. Like, do you remember the Save Mary Kate shirt?
Wait, can you say more about this? I just unlocked something.
I know, because you unlocked it for me when I was just thinking about just how toxic this. I keep using that word. Yeah. I've been triggered all day in the best way. Like things I really needed to examine. But there was a shirt that some like internet company put out, and it was Save Mary Kate, and it was blue. I remember like a baby blue. It had a black drawn. Remember that image of her like on the red carpet, and she's in this like light purple dress, and she's like kind of posing, and you see all of her ribs.
Like yeah, it was like yeah, a yeah. It's peak, like backless.
Yeah, trigger warning. Yeah. Peak anorexia. Yeah. Some monster went on the internet and started selling like a huge image of that shirt, which is Save Mary Kate on it, and they ended up suing them, or Dual Star Entertainment did, whatever their company was. But I just remember.
Yeah,
that be like seeing that shirt at the peak of Perez Hilton, like the gay bully at my school wearing it, offering to buy it for people who like couldn't order online.
Right.
Like just like that was the humor of the time.
Yeah.
Speaking of things like that, the lawsuit with Samantha Ronson against Perez Hilton, how did she lose that?
She sued him and he countersued her for like defamation, basically. Or, you know, for what is the word? There's a legal word for it.
Slander.
She lost, and she ended up having to pay him $85,000, according to the internet. Yeah.
Like, what was it? Because she couldn't prove that that wasn't her cocaine, or like what? I'm trying to think of like what would have been the thing, because it sounds so dangerous that you could just be like, oh yeah, it was this person's cocaine without like a shred of evidence, and then like make those shirts.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
yeah. The t-shirt thing reminded me of it.
I do remember Save Mary Kate, but I feel like, you know, obviously my book has like a focus on like the queer girl stuff, but like
right.
the 2000s were so harsh to truly everyone and everything, where like, you know, like we, like Britney and, you know, the Amy Winehouses of the world and, you know, Lindsay Lohan and stuff. You know, like we
women.
Were like, yeah, women,
Paris Hilton. Yeah.
Like, you know, all of these things that we were like talking about as being bad or making somebody bad or crazy, like having an eating disorder or being a drug addict or, you know, like things, or having a mental illness, like all of these things that we know now as being like, this person deserves like help and empathy and is a human being, and it does not make them bad to be mentally ill or have an, you know, an eating disorder, like so many things. And yeah, and like thinking about like also how Perez, you know, talked about like Mary Kate Olsen and like Nicole Richie and like all the, you know, like it's so much of it. It was the harshest of harsh times.
Yeah. So how do we feel about it being in vogue now, at least aesthetically? I don't know. I hope I don't just see a thrifted Save Mary Kate shirt. That's all I'm saying. I know a lot of the kids are jumping back into the aughts fashion wise.
Yeah, no.
They know better.
We should not engage Gen Z. Please don't.
But yeah.
They're I think for the most part smarter and have more like empathy than most.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So how did you feel like the shift with Lindsay when she kind of basically like walked back on that entire relationship and was like, I was never queer, like all of that? How did that make you feel?
Yeah, I have kind of turned a blind eye to this because I love her and I want it to be pure, even though it isn't anymore.
Yeah,
I remember like a few years ago I was writing for like Into, the LGBT, you know, magazine, whatever. And like covering this, I think Lindsay went on like Wendy Williams, I think is where she like officially said out loud that she was like rescinding her bi label. Yeah. Which I don't think you can do I like sexuality and gender is like also fluid, and also like doing a take backsies feels bad. You know, I think like you, like for me, she's clearly like not wanting to associate with that label, and also probably with like a really hard time in her life that I'm like going to psychoanalyze here, but I can imagine like going through that media shitstorm where everyone, you know, like basically associated her queer relationship with her being like mentally ill and an addict. Like she probably conflated those things too because of that, you know. I could assume. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like I can see that happening for her, where like she, you know, maybe feels that that was a bad time in her life because it wasn't like, it was like maybe a toxic relationship. But like that doesn't mean that you're not queer. Like you very publicly dated, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hurtful to me personally because I love her so much, and right. I want her to still be like a big part of the queer community.
Yeah. We're rooting for her.
Yeah.
Like I feel like she just, like I know her so well, and she just hasn't been herself in a long time, you know?
Yes. I was like talking to in another interview that I did about my book and Lindsay Lohan. That I've done, I really won't stop talking about this. Is it, but you know, we were also discussing that she's not herself right now, and I want so badly for her to return to being herself. I don't know. To me,
yeah.
I bonded so much with her in like the movie Freaky Friday, which I feel like is so much like queer signaling, just like
yeah.
outfits and the being in a band of it all.
Yeah.
Like that is to me, like that's where I'm like, at a certain point, I turn a blind eye to Lindsay Lohan stuff. So like, she was such a big part of my queer awakening that it is really hard for me to grapple with.
Yeah. I mean, like Lindsay Lohan trying to channel Jamie Lee Curtis energy, like in itself is,
yes. I mean, we could pivot to mommy issues right now.
Pivotal mommy issues film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My OG mommy. Talk about queer awakening. I talk about it a lot on this podcast. I won't go into it. I obviously realized I was queer watching her striptease in True Lies. Jamie Lee Curtis. And yeah, that is a queer fever dream, that movie. I should go back because we have Lindsay and Jamie in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But your book has one of the best chapter names I think I've ever seen. Step on Me, Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Finally. Yeah. I'm loving the mommy issue discourse.
yeah. You know, when this first came out, like, and was hitting kind of a first came out being like this step on me rhetoric being like so mainstream, and with Rachel Weisz, and I was like, what's going on? I don't get, I felt like such an old, I was just like, what are these kids talking about? Punch yeah. me in the face, run me over, choke me. What's happening? And like people were like trying to explain to me, I'm like, okay, I guess. And like eventually I'm like, okay, now I'm like starting to get it. I'm starting to get it. And your book breaks it down so great. But yeah, let's get into the intersection of step on me culture / MILFs.
Please let's get into it. Let's always get into MILFs.
Yes.
No, I mean I do get pretty serious, pretty analytical in this part, yeah. talking about the phrase step on me, mom. No, I mean, like for me personally, and you know, I cannot speak for the entire queer community. For me personally, I feel like I repressed so much about myself and my personality, and a big part of that being like my desires for so long that, you know, even like course correcting as a child and having like maybe a really pure, simple crush on like a teacher, and knowing that if I was ever like, wow, like Miss Long is so pretty, that people would be like, okay, dyke, you know,
right.
like that I I held back talking about my desires for so long that now that I am out and that the culture has like changed enough where I am not going to be called slurs for simply expressing who I am interested in sexually, it like pours out of me in truly like violent outbursts. And I think, you know, like, you know, I don't know, had I been afforded the opportunity as a child to just be like, Miss Long is so pretty, maybe I would not be on Twitter screaming like Rachel Weisz, punch me in the mouth, you know?
Right.
But the reality is that I am doing that.
Yeah.
And I can't stop.
Yeah. There's a urgency.
Yeah, it is. It's like an urgency. It's like, it's involuntary. It just like pours out. I don't know. Do you guys feel this way? Am I alone in this?
I mean, I had never thought about it in the context of it being like exclusive to older women, I guess. But like when I met Jenna Lyons, I'm like, stab me in the eye with your stiletto. Like, yeah. That's like the first thing that comes to mind.
Right.
It resonates with me. I think this way. What I had never thought about was how you perfectly laid it out, the frustration with straight people using this language. Yeah. And how like this is like an inherently queer way to lust. Yeah. And yearn for right. someone using these like violent outbursts, because I'm not trying to paraphrase you, but straight people can't lust violently because their lusting has never been met with actual violence. So it's like, exactly. It's for us. Yeah. Right.
You said it much better than me. Like, I feel like it bothers me to watch like straight people try to like get in on the like joke or the culture of of being like Adam Driver, like step on me. And I'm just like, you know what, Sarah?
Take a walk.
Yeah, cool, like take a shower. Like, I just there's no grand admission in like saying that. Like, as a straight woman, you are attracted to Adam Driver. Like, that is just so normal and always has been, or like considered normal by so many people that like, yeah, I think that the other element that I like didn't mention before is that there is this kind of like queer shame in it, you know, where it's like the like power dynamic of like the mom you would like to step on you, you know, of like being the all powerful and you are just like this tiny little like gay worm who has always been shamed for their desires and feel maybe deep down that you deserve to be stepped on. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that's part of it.
Oh, it's there. I think it's definitely a bunch of those things. And you're right. Like, I never really did think about that much of like not being able to express like my attraction for women. Again, like even when I was queer, but I didn't want to, or like out and gay, like I had girlfriends, but I didn't want to be creepy by saying like a celebrity was hot. So I'd be like, oh, there's something about her, like she's so beautiful or she's so talented or something like that. So it just like didn't seem like objectifying. But then with men, I felt like, oh, I can objectify men even though I'm not really attracted to them. But that feels like okay to make those statements about. And then it just jumped from being like, oh, she's so talented and like so interesting to like run me over.
It's like we took a giant leap there. I also was like that. I feel like in high school and stuff, it could never be me to start the conversation about how hot Lindsay Lohan or whoever was. But when any of my like straight friends were like, Lindsay Lohan looks so hot in Mean Girls, I would be like, totally, right? Am I right? And then, you know, and like definitely take it too far, of course. Because I would always like, that would be like my in to be like, okay, right? Like, this isn't weird. Like, Lindsay Lohan is objectively beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Fucking right.
I know. I was so horned up from that movie and would always try to talk about her body, but then make it be like, and I wish I could fill up a juicy velour zip up that way. Like,
Right. Like, you could only talk about it in terms of jealousy, like other straight women. Yeah.
Like, I want that hair too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I mean, I will forever remember this moment where I was shamed so hard. It was before, it was right before I came out, but like it was also right around the time that I was realizing that I was gay. And I got this job working at a movie theater and was like trying to make friends, whatever. So these two like cool girls working in the cafe were talking about Ocean's 11 and like all the hot guys in it, but they were talking about the actors. I'm like, yeah. Oh yeah, I can't wait to see it. Julia Roberts. And the one person, Caitlin, turns to me and she's like, I don't know about you, but we're talking about hot guys, but if that's your thing. And I was like ready to die.
It's like a Freeform show scene.
Yeah. Totally. It was so me. And I'm like, they know. Like, yeah. And I'm like, I messed up. Fuck. And like, yeah. Can never, all I said was like, and Julia Roberts, like that was it.
I wasn't people were so fucking ready all the time. Like in the 2000s, I feel like I was like on edge constantly. So alert because it was like truly the smallest thing like that. Not even being like, Julia Roberts is so hot. Doesn't everyone here want to fuck Julia Roberts? Like literally all you had to do was and being like, I'm excited to see this movie with this woman that I like in it. And people would be like, okay, homo. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa. Yeah. There was so much of that.
Even with Mean Girls, the Janice Ian of it all, like that, you know, that's the whole reason she hates her because she thought she was
She was a lesbian.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At one point in your book, you write lesbian. Yeah. And that was something that was hurled at me as a kid. That's instead of if people were getting tired of the dyke, like homo. Yeah. Sometimes some mean girls in my class would go lesbian, just honk it in a French accent at you. And I read you say or spell it out that way, and it just took me back.
Wow, I like the idea.
So I was like, did that happen to her too, or? Was that just a choice you made like for fun, or like were people saying, I was like, that seems specifically my school.
Did someone from Melody School reach out to you? And
No, that feels like the queer honking or the honking slurs that's specific. No, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But I am always, I feel like trying to take a word that was hurled at me in a negative way in my youth and reclaiming it and being like,
dress it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
okay,
funny.
Okay, cool.
Though.
I had to know. Yeah. That just popped in my head. Threw me for a loop.
Funny.
I mean, with the mainstreaming of lesbians, I feel like now we also have this thing going on where celebrities are coming out, but they're just saying, I'm open to anything. Like Susan Sarandon. And it's like, it's like almost like there's this like fear of, not fear, but like, it's like not cool to be straight anymore. Yeah. So a lot of people are being like, oh yeah, I'm open to anything. And then it's like a headline, you know, or it's trending on Twitter, like this person's gay. And it's like, queer. Like, I don't think they're queer. They said they're open, but how do you feel about that?
Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
really pressed about how cool she's being perceived.
Okay, well, I would say I don't want to say who I was going to say because I don't want people to come after me. So.
I will tread lightly again because same. But this really bothers me. I'm like, actually, I do want to say it, but it bothers me because I think if you talk about queerness in this like coded way in this day and age of being like, well, you know, you don't know, I could do anything, then it's like, well, then just say what you've done. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like if it's not scary and it's not a big deal, that's like, if it's not a big deal, like you're kind of making it a bigger deal by still like obfuscating, you know what I mean? I think that's just not brave. And I don't, you know, there's in a lot of ways, like, it's not like, brave to come out for a lot of people anymore. Like, I think, like, you know, someone like Elliot Page, who like came out as queer a long time ago before people were really saying it, and that was brave. And then, you know, and then came out as trans. Like, these are things that I think are important, and like making these statements explicitly is important. And I think and it does bother me when people talk about sexuality in the year 2022 as being like, I don't know, you just can't say that it's not a big deal while also not explicitly saying what you mean. Because if it wasn't a big deal, then you could just say it, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
I think you're like, the message you're communicating is that there is still some kind of like secret to be had.
Yeah, if the vagueness feels like Ilaria Baldwin-esque, you know, like not being completely transparent about her background. I know.
Yeah.
It's not her orientation, but it just reminds me of that.
I feel safe that we can bring that up without getting shit. So,
yeah.
Good reference, Mel.
That is a really good reference.
Safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think like I think I'm just like exhausted by the like celebrity culture of obfuscating and making it seem like I feel kind of all or nothing about representation in 2022, where it's like you know, either like talk about it and be proud about it or be honest about where you're at with it at least, or don't. Because, you know, even like this is something I'm gonna get hate comments, I feel. But like, you know, Zoe Kravitz recently said that she played Catwoman bisexually.
Yeah.
I do want to preface by saying like, she is God, and I will not be saying anything negative about God. And I also think that, you know, when you identify as queer, like, I believe that that is real for her, that she brought, you know, like a queerness to the role because she is queer. So there is a natural, you know, energy there. I feel like I've seen like studios and TV shows and whatever do this kind of thing of talking about like implied queerness. And it's like, that's not enough. And this is, again, the Dumbledore
of it all. Like,
right. And it's like, there's nothing to do with her. It's like, no shade to her at all, because I think if she had it her way, like, Catwoman would have some bisexual moments in the movie.
Sure, sure.
You know, so, but it's like, there is no such thing as playing something bisexually if there is no explicit shows or discussion about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, right. It's kind of useless.
Yeah.
So useless. It was just because she, like, threw in a baby here and a longing look there, like, I don't know.
I feel pretty like all or nothing lately about representation, because I'm just tired of like I'm tired of getting like watered down kind of stuff, you know. And like, I want something that's like as explicit or and unique as like The Favorite, or, you know what I mean, like just say the thing, or you're communicating a message that we should not be saying the thing.
Right, right. And you just had a piece come out in Time about representation, and like, don't just give us a queer character for the sake of representation if it's not going to reflect like an actual queer narrative or story or experience.
Yeah. Everything I was just talking about was, you know, some like what I covered in the article is just like, I am frustrated by like some of the, like, I feel, you know, queer characters that I've been seeing where it feels like, you know, people are just throwing in a queer character in anything to like meet some sort of like quota. But to me, you just owned that you were a heterosexual show. Then like give us someone who like explicitly speaks in, you know, like queer theory and like doesn't have real human traits or like a life or relationships, and just is like, you know, they're saying things like patriarchy or whatever.
Woke moment.
Exactly. And yeah, like, I would just rather watch like a movie about a queer person than watch a show that's like one queer person in a group of all straight people, which makes no sense because where are their queer friends, you know?
Right. How do you feel about actors who are not out and may identify as straight playing queer roles? Because this is something where I feel like
we've been thinking about this lately.
Yeah.
Why? Because we're seeing that same ham-fisted queer character.
Yeah.
Just arbitrarily placed in. We're seeing that with what, queer couplings on shows and TV or movies, and they have no chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we'd rather have two, maybe not gay characters, but the chemistry's there.
Yeah.
To serve the story better. How do you feel?
I feel like my opinion is like still, you know, morphing on this, where it's in some ways, I feel like it's almost case by case, because I've seen plenty of movies where like, you know, straight identifying like woman like nails it, and it is really hot and it feels really genuine.
You can just say Cate Blanchett.
You can just say Carol. Carol. Okay, like, you know, like
Carol. Shiva baby.
Right. But like, I feel, baby, you know, with like someone like Cate Blanchett or Rachel Weisz, or like these are like two actors who I love and in some ways feel like, hell yeah. Like, you know, I think like, especially in 2015 when Carol came out, it was really cool to see like such a huge, huge actress in this role. Mm-hmm. But again, like as the culture like moves forward and changes, you know, and I see this on like the other side of things of like trying to get something made, like a short film or a film made, people don't want to, a lot of like the like behind the scenes process is that like there is like a script or an idea or something, and some, and like a star attaches to it. And that's what like ultimately gets the project made. And I think that like studios have created this like big catch 22 where like a lot of genuine, authentic lesbian movies made by queer women don't get made because there aren't that many out like lesbian stars, you know? Right. So I think like there's this like big mess with like representation where like, I think sometimes stories that queer women write end up getting played by, like the roles get played by straight superstars, but which is like good for them because they're getting their movie made, but then it ends up being, in sum, I think like what we should focus on is like making, supporting queer actors and making them superstars, so that more, like it's like a whole catch 22 where like, yes, it's like the more, you know, the more Kristen Stewarts there are, the more like star power there is, the more like
the more happiest seasons there are.
Exactly.
Stop. For better or worse.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just think about how many times there have been like quote unquote straight actors cast in a queer role who like later they turn out not to be so straight. Piper Chapman and Taylor Schilling.
Yeah.
You know, or like even Chloe Grace Moretz in Cameron Post, people were like, oh, why did they cast a straight person? It's like, well, one, like she's young. You don't know. You can't there's sometimes people know inside information when they're casting, sometimes not. But like, it just always sucks when I feel like people get criticized for being cast or like taking a role and then they have to like apologize. But it's like, but what if they are queer, or like, what if, I don't know. It just seems like a little bit of a crazy.
Yeah, no. And I agree. I definitely like emphatically feel like there should be no hard and fast rule about like who can play gay. And also there's like so many stories, like, you know, Orange is the New Black is a good example of like someone like the writer Lauren Morelli, who realized that she was queer in writing for the show and on and working on the show. Like, you know, it things evolve. So even if it's like that person isn't out, there's also a part of, like, they could go into it feeling like, yes, I am straight, and then learn they are not, you know? So like,
I'm straight. I'm just so drawn to this.
Yeah. Right.
Something about it.
So it just feels so good. I don't know. The chemistry is so real. I don't feel like, no, like straight people or straight identifying people at the time should not be allowed to play gay. But I do think like the bigger fight is like making sure that we are making superstars out of the like out queer actors that do exist, you know?
Right.
Definitely. I love that.
Which is also kind of a catch 22, because that's not our jobs as audiences so much as like studio heads and people, white men in power.
Right.
Which is something you're sort of dealing with right now in getting a short film made or out there. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. I shot a short film that I wrote and directed a couple weeks ago. It's called The Ladies, and it's about a queer woman who moves in with her grandma for the summer after her grandpa dies to kind of help out in her with her grandma and her like Jewish senior living community in Florida, and ends up having like an affair with her grandma's best friend. So that's the gist of the short film.
Love it.
Yeah. Horny MILF content for anyone.
Yes. Who, I'm there subscribes. For it. I hope it turns into a feature or a series. I'm there.
Me too.
You've already sold me on it.
Thank you. Me too.
I assume that's why anybody makes a short film. It's just for more monies to make the bigger version of it. But, you know, sometimes it's just
we're
an
manifesting.
Art form. Right. You know, you talk about in the book the different eras of lesbianism, scrubbing, leaking, outcasting, spilling. We're in mainstreaming now. What do you think is next? Where do we go from mainstream?
Yeah, well, you know what? I feel like kind of what we were just talking about and what I wrote in my article for Time is like what I would like to see next is like more authenticity. Because I think that now that things have been, because like queerness has become so mainstream, it has gotten kind of like watered down, and some of the like messaging I think gets lost in there. And like, you know, the kinds of stories that are important and change lives, or also don't have to be like, you know, life-changing important stories, but just like human stories about queer people. Like those are the kinds of things that I would like to see next. So I think like after the mainstreaming comes, you know, hopefully, this is, I'm just speaking it into existence, is just, I would just like to see a lot more like authentic queer stories told, and whether they're like I said, like important and, you know, life-changing, or like my favorite kinds of movies are like, you know, The Kids Are All Right. Like I love The Kids Are All Right, you know, I would love to just see like funny, messy, heartfelt stories where queer people don't slam a woke moment button.
So like normalization? I'm trying to...
if I can think of a word. I'm like authentication?
There's no pressure.
No.
Yeah.
That sounds so dumb.
Total domination.
Yeah, that would be... Yeah. And then after that, the next phase is, of course, world domination.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And mandatory conversion.
Mandatory queerness. Yeah.
This has been great. It's been so fun to talk to you about all this stuff. And I hope, listeners, you simply must get a copy of this book. It's so good and has so much important information if you want to, you know, be in the know about queer culture, and so many great references. Oh, wait, one quick thing. Shoot, that I didn't mention before I ask, like, where should people buy it? Where should people follow you? Neve Campbell's bangs. like,
good point.
It's been, I mean, maybe that's just all I wanted to say. No, it's been an obsession of mine since Scream. But I've never been able to like fully understand like why Neve Campbell with bangs has been just like a hallmark of like queer for me. Like,
yeah.
Do you have any more insight on that?
First of all, thank you for bringing this up. Okay. I think that I feel like when I was younger, I interpreted a lot of like when in the complete absence of like queer women on screen, just seeing a woman who was like empowered and independent and like just kind of like strong-willed was like enough, you know, at the time.
Right.
And I feel like Sydney in Scream is one of these kind of like, you know, I mean, also so much about the 90s, like everything she was wearing is very like queer culture. There's just like the denims and right. the, you know, the, I don't know, The bangs
Indigo
of
Girls poster in the bedroom. Like, was that a subliminal message? Was I like, you know?
Right. Like, I feel like that used to be in the 90s, like an image of like the cool girl or something.
Yeah.
And really, like, we know that is like the gay girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, she was like, you know, not only like aesthetically signaling, but I think that like, you know, those kinds of like, you know, I'm also thinking of like, what's her name in like the Terminator or
oh yeah,
Sigourney Weaver in Alien, like these kinds of,
right.
Even Thelma and Louise, like just the way that, I don't know, there was so much like aesthetic signaling. And I think also when we got to watch, I'm giving you like a serious answer about Nev Campbell's bangs. getting in too deep.
Carolyn thinks seriously about it.
Yeah, I do. I think about it a lot.
Yeah. No, but like, I don't know. I just think that truly like movies that passed the Bechdel test at the time were like,
right.
You know, just like a woman who was like doing something powerful was just like very hot to me or to us, maybe.
Also, all the examples you just gave are women who like at some point in the movie are like dirty, like they're covered in like sweat, blood, dirt, like whatever it is, and like, is that a thing? Like even when we interviewed Jasmine and Liv from Yellow Jackets, Melody was like, oh, I'm not used to seeing you two looking so clean. Like,
yeah, so clean.
Yeah. And they're like, what? It's like, no, usually you're, you know, on that island, but that makes it like extra
weird. Yeah.
Extra queer.
Why?
No, yeah. And then it's also like, you know, that thing of like, is it queer or am I just like so gay that I think it's like hot and I like can't separate these things, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right.
So it's like, I, you know, that was like, maybe a made up answer about Nev Campbell. And maybe the answer is really just that, like, we thought she was really hot.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Because it was definitely something to journal about.
Yeah.
Melody and I were recently added to a Twitter group message about Carol Radziwill from Real Housewives of New York. Mm-hmm. And the kind of orchestrator of this group has like Nev Campbell with bangs as her avatar. And I'm like, there's more of us.
There's this internet stranger.
Yeah.
We don't know what she looks like. We just see this avatar pop up every day and she has new information on potential queerness about this Real Housewives star that we love.
That's important.
Yeah.
But also like Nev Campbell in Wild Things, like that was an actually queer role.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seminal film. Seminal Big queer time. Film.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I just got all sorts of feelings. and on that note, where would you like people to purchase the book and where can they follow you online?
Yeah. You can buy Girls Can Kiss now at your independent bookstore. Local independent bookstore would be the best. Or, you know, it's on all the places, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. You can follow me on Twitter at Jillboard, spelled like Billboard, or on Instagram at Jill Gutowitz.
Love it.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Jill. This has been fun.
Oh my God. Thank you guys.
For your service overall. All you do for the community.
I salute you.
Oh my God. Thank you guys so much. Thank you for even reading and supporting the book. I'm so, so grateful.
Wow. Since we recorded this interview the other week, that Harper's article that she wrote got a lot of traction because it got picked up by the New York Post. And then I see people sharing out the post. Multiple straight people have sent me the post headline.
Not the original Harper's.
Not but the original.
The Post picked it up with the post
recycling of it.
Title. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like lesbian. What is the Post title?
It was "Dressing Like a Lesbian is Sexy. Powerful new trend, fashion expert says." Okay, Jill.
I like how, Jill, congratulations.
You're a fashion expert.
You're a fashion
we should have included
expert.
That in our little like bio before the interview.
Well, yes, edit, post interview edit. Jill is also a fashion expert and great. I love it. I think it's really funny. And people are having all sorts of reactions to it. But leave it to Jill to get lesbians in the mainstream.
Yeah.
When you have lesbians in a New York Post clickbait headline, we are mainstreaming our pop culture. Love it.
Yes, Carolyn, things are getting better, but things are not so fast in a lot of pockets in the country. And we have a listener question from a certain one of those pockets. Okay.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. This week's listener question. I live in a Midwestern state and I'm probably a Kinsey scale 4 dating a Kinsey scale 2 to 3. My question is, do you have any tips/internalized monologue to help process homophobic comments people make to you about having a bisexual partner?
The Kinsey scale goes to 6, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just to, when people are like, what does a 4, what does a 2 to 3 mean? 6 yeah. being like, I'm a Kinsey 6.
Right. It is definitely 6, okay. right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's definitely not 7. Sometimes I second guess and go to 7. It's 6, right? 6, 0 to 6. Okay. For example, I recently had a straight woman friend tell me she's always thought my girlfriend would be better suited for a man. That's not a friend. Anyways, comments like that really hurt. Yeah. We have a great relationship and we have been together for over 5 years. I know we're solid, but we receive a lot of negativity from more conservative people we're forced to have in our lives. How do I cope with invalidating comments on my queer relationship?
I mean, my instinct is it's probably too late, but for that friend, be like, oh, that's really funny because I've always thought your boyfriend would be better suited with another man.
Ooh, that's, you're better than me. Mine was, oh, that's interesting. I always thought you would die alone.
I always think like making an equally charged comment makes them realize, like, make them realize that what they're saying is stupid. If you're not somebody who's quick to dish out comebacks like that, not much of a snapback person, I think just asking, how do you think that comment makes me feel? Just put them on the spot. Like when somebody says something uncomfortable, just be like, what do you think my reaction should be to that? Like, how do you think that that makes me feel? And then they'll stop and realize they're an asshole. But I think making people stop, drop, and realize they're an asshole is...
Stop, drop, and roll back the tapes. I like to just be like, hey, what? What did you just say? And make them say it again.
Yeah.
And be like, wait, did you just hear yourself? Like, just really make them go back and hear themselves say it. I don't know. Really? Stop, drop, and roll back the tapes. That's the new.
Love it.
So pleased with myself. Yeah, that sucks. You're in your Midwestern state living your best queer life. And you're these conservative people. I mean, how much are we going to change their minds? Not much, but we can change how they think they can talk to people and how they can respect people's relationships. They don't have to understand it, but you have to let them know that that is a very rude thing to say. And sometimes you have to, like Carolyn did, flip the tables and have them reflect on how they would answer a dumb question like that.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely shouldn't take it personally. I think straight people, they just don't know how to talk. Their communication skills, I think, are a little bit underdeveloped, and they say things that are inappropriate. And I don't think it's like on you to find ways of like being okay with that. I think it's definitely more of a matter of things that you can do to get them to realize it and flipping the script and doing the same to them, because they don't, I don't know. I've done that before though, to no avail, of like, oh, this person doesn't understand how ridiculous they are. I'm going to do the same thing they do to me back to them.
Always. That
and
always
then they're
works.
Like, no. No. One time I did in a big way. I'm not going to get into it. And they were just like, has anyone noticed Carolyn's been kind of weird lately? I'm like, you missed the point.
Yeah.
You know, maybe straight people also aren't good at picking up on passive aggressive cues, but, you know, be a little bit less passive, be a little bit more aggressive.
We're like, listen, straight people, you're going to encounter them. They have no perspective, sense of humor. Yeah.
It's, it's tough.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You just have to let these people know that there's a no-fly zone with certain things. They're clearly not able to talk about your relationship, so they shouldn't at all. You yeah. know, my cousin married gung-ho Trump supporter. I say that now in 2022. Trump supporter. Still talking about Trump. And he, when he comes to gatherings with the rest of the progressive Persian family, this white guy, anytime things turn political, if he's been drinking or something, she just has to start shouting a safe word to shut him up. I don't know. Have that with your family. When things get dicey after a few beers, just have someone in your family start squawking, cupcake! Okay, cupcake! Cupcake, you guys! That's what she says to get us past those topics he's not authorized to comment on.
Yeah, I love that. I love having a safe word for heteronormativity.
Yeah. Try it. It works for us. Yeah. We just shout cupcake to shut Mike up.
Shut up, Mike. Unless your name is Mike and you have a listener question, then send it in.
Dykeyow@gmail.com.
Please send us your questions. We love to get them, read them out, and tell you to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Be aggressive.
As a response, whatever the question is, just be more aggressive.
Yeah.
You can follow us everywhere at Dyking Out or at Dyking Out Podcast on TikTok, which I'll try to be more active so we don't miss out on being cast as the next Tegan and Sarah.
Right?
It's all my fault. We could have played Tegan and Sarah in their new show, High School, but because I am so scared of TikTok, we missed the boat. So maybe next time. Follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Diane_Keaton. Listen, she posts more than I do. She's 76 years old and she posts more than I do. Just go ahead and follow Diane Keaton because I'm not I'm not posting. I just, you know,
all the turtleneck content you could ever want. Follow Diane Keaton.
Go
I'm going to say
her.
Follow Melody Kamali at Melody Kamali. Thank you for diking out with us this week. Sign up for our Patreon if you haven't yet, and
see you next Tuesday.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.